It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Sandy Rios with you on this Wednesday morning. Good morning. There is so much news, and of course, Washington has their outrage of the day. Every 24 hours, they're outraged about something. And this time it is that President Trump has claimed it's like a lynching, what's happening to him. And we will talk about that, but not much. I don't want to dwell on that. If we just, it's like chasing, you know, a little animal chasing their tail. Washington has to have an outrage every day against President Trump. It's becoming daily. So every day they look for something. So yesterday in the 24-hour news cycle, that's all they talk about. But let me just tell you, there's a lot more news in the world. And we're going to talk about that right up front. Some of the other things that are happening, because I think they're very important. Hong Kong formally has withdrawn an extradition bill. Remember, that's the bill that caused the thousands and thousands of protesters, and some would say 80% of Hong Kongians, to go out in the streets in support of fighting for their freedom. They do not want to be like mainland China. They were promised they wouldn't be. It was like two states, one state, but two separate ways of governing. That was kind of the promise when Britain handed back control of the island of Hong Kong to mainland China. It was a mistake. It was a mistake to do that. I don't really know why the Brits did that, but they did it. And so the young Hong Kongers, along with their fathers and mothers, teachers, people in hospitals, college students, have been out in those streets protesting in unbelievable ways. In fact, yesterday, the government banned them from, or over the weekend, the government had banned them from wearing any masks, for covering their faces, and thousands of them went out with masks in defiance. It's pretty amazing, and I've said before, and I will say again, you know, the young people of Hong Kong are like our young people. You know, Hong Kong is wealthy. They have stuff. They've got electronics. They've got beautiful clothes. You know, they have good jobs. And yet they somehow understand, maybe because of their proximity to mainland China, because of the experiences of their parents are written, you know, on their hearts about what it's like not to be free. They have been willing to give up jobs, to go out and be willing to really put their lives on the line. One protester was shot point blank. And the Chinese military and the Hong Kong military and Hong Kong police have, you know, been on edge. And it's amazing to me that more people have not been killed. So we now know that overnight Hong Kong formally withdrew that extradition bill. And that's a big deal. That's a very big deal. It's not everything the protesters were asking for. And they're saying that all five of their demands need to be met in order for them to stop in the streets. But for China to back down, you can see how serious it is for China. And so the other demands that they're asking, just to give you an idea, is an independent investigation into the police and how they conducted themselves, and also amnesty for protesters who've been arrested because they are concerned about how they're going to be treated, and you can understand that. So anyway, that's a kind of a victory. Now, meanwhile, you know that the NBA has been weighing in on this, and that the coach of one of the teams in the NBA tweeted out his support for the protesters in Hong Kong, and then he had to withdraw that support of Hong Kong. Well, last night at a game, what game was this? I printed it out now, I don't know, but there was a game last night for the NBA, and somebody printed out these T-shirts in support of Hong Kong, and people wore them even though at a game at the, I believe it's the Capital One building in Washington, D.C., just last week, remember? Some people, about three or four people, had these banners in support of Hong Kong and T-shirts in support, and they were asked to remove them and to take the banners down. And it was really interesting. I played that clip for you while the Star Spangled Banner was being sung in the background, and the singer was singing "The Land of the Free and the Home of the Brave," while you hear this official from the stadium demanding that those people remove that sign and take off those shirts. And so as a response to that in a game last night, many people showed up. I think, I don't know how many there were. I will have to find that news report. But they wore those shirts and stood in honor of Hong Kong. And of course, then it's led into the whole discussion of free speech for Americans about how they feel about Hong Kong. The NBA is doing big business in Hong Kong, lots of contracts. And so so there's been a lot of dissension. Shaquille O'Neal weighed in on this last night. I thought it was pretty interesting. I want you to hear what he had to say.
We as American people, we do a lot of business in China, and they know and understand our values, and we understand their values. And one of our best values here in America is free speech. We're allowed to say what we want to say, and we're allowed to speak up about injustices, and that's just how it goes. And if people don't understand that, that's something that they have to deal with. But, you know, I just think it was unfortunate for, you know, both parties, and then you got people speaking when they don't know what they're talking about. But you know, Daryl Morey was right. Whenever you see something wrong going on anywhere in the world, you should have the right to say, that's not right, and that's what he did. And but again, you know, when it comes to business, sometimes you have to tiptoe around things. But in our values, we understand our values. And here, we have the right to speak, especially with the social media. We're going to say whatever we want to say, when we want to say it.
Good for Shaquille O'Neal. And that was in response to Charles Barkley's support of LeBron James, talking about there should be limits on free speech. And so, isn't it interesting? I mean, these are good discussions, I have to say. I think for all of the frustration we've had with social media, and with the lack of the attempts to limit our free speech, we are having some good discussions, and discussions which hopefully will wake up, you know, so many of you who are parents who graduated in the school system and don't really understand why that's important. And now your children are further from understanding why that's important. And so I think these discussions are important. And speaking of free speech, Mark Zuckerberg did a speech at Georgetown University just last week. I mentioned that. This is a report by Byron York. I want to be more specific about it. Mark Zuckerberg said, "We don't fact check political ads. We don't do this to help politicians, but because we think people should be able to see for themselves what politicians are saying." Now, that's amazing, because you may recall that Facebook in the 2018 election cycle stopped various ads from running. They said they were trying to, you know, eliminate fake news, as though that organization was able to vet every commercial and every candidate around the world, by the way, not just in the United States. And so I think Facebook has kind of done a mea culpa on this. I think that's very good. I want to go ahead with this and explain that Facebook decided to allow an ad, a campaign ad, from Donald Trump's organization to run that basically said Joe Biden promised Ukraine $1 billion if they fired the prosecutor investigating his son's company. Now, the spot was reviewed by attorneys for its accuracy, and it was placed, they bought space on Facebook, but the Biden campaign had a fit. They said whether it originates from the Kremlin or Trump Tower, these lies and conspiracy theories threaten to undermine the integrity of our elections in America. That's coming from the Biden camp. Now, this is not new news, but you just need to understand that's what was in play here. And what happened with Facebook is Mark Zuckerberg came down saying the company made its decision out of respect for free expression and faith that a controversial ad will receive intense scrutiny in today's media world. In mature democracies with a free press, political speech is already arguably the most scrutinized speech there is. Mark Zuckerberg, in his remarks to Georgetown, said that there is a consensus that Facebook should censor incitements to violence or child pornography or terroristic threats, but political speech is something very different. Zuckerberg himself said that Facebook is going to focus on the authenticity of the speaker rather than the content itself. In other words, when fake accounts are set up, if they come from Russia or Iran, which are two of the, they set up fake accounts as though we're Americans, that's what we're going to be in the business of stopping, but not the actual content. We're not going to be in the business of vetting every ad. And he says, as a principle in a democracy, I believe people should decide what is credible, not tech companies. I have to tell you, I'm thrilled about this. And that doesn't mean we're out of the woods with social media. So I want you to be happy about this, but not lose perspective here, of that this may be a temporary bump in time But it's a very good bump. It's a very good bump. So that's the news from Facebook and a free speech for the morning. Do you remember, Rob, if we've got that Antifa clip? Yeah, okay, good. You guys remember when the president went to Minneapolis just last week and spoke, and we played this clip because I felt that the riots or the, no, I shouldn't say riot, protests, the violent protests, we'll say that, of Antifa were not covered. And yet, like several days later, we got this montage. Let's listen to it one more time. So that just gives you a taste of it. That's Antifa. They're yelling, eat the rich, and things that we can't repeat. Also, kill the cops. And they were attacking, literally attacking Trump people as they went into the stadium. We saw one little vignette of a man and his wife walking through the crowd. The woman is smiling. I described it earlier, and I will say again, as though she's trying to be very gracious. She's smiling to the protesters as her husband is ahead of her but has her hand, and she's walking behind him. And a protester from Antifa comes up and hits her right in the head. And you see her face, the startled look. Okay, so that's Antifa, that proud group. Well, speaking of pride, this is what happened in New York. This is really disturbing to me. A Manhattan judge Tuesday sentenced two members of the right-wing Proud Boys group for 4 years in prison for pummeling leftist Antifa members during a brawl in an Upper East Side. Justice Mark Dwyer gave Maxwell Hare, 27, and John Kinsman, 40, terms that were 6 months above the minimum for the caught-on-camera skirmish near the Metropolitan Republican Club after Proud Boys founder Gavin McInnes delivered a speech. One of them is a dad of three. They both apologized. They said they made a mistake. I made quick decisions. I'm sorry. But this is what happened that night. The fight unfolded shortly after McInnes, he's the founder of Proud Boys, ended, after his speech ended and the Proud Boys exited the venue, as 60 protesters, including members of Antifa, massed behind barricades and jeered at them. To avoid a confrontation, cops directed the Proud Boys west on 83rd Street, then south on Park Avenue, while they shepherded their opponents in the other direction. As the Proud Boys neared East 82nd Street, they saw six suspected Antifa protesters, clad in black, heading toward them. Instead of walking away, the defendants and their pals sprinted more than 100 feet toward their foes, instigating the fight. Steinglass said, during the violent confrontation, Kinsman and Hare, those are the guys that have been sentenced, repeatedly punched, kicked, and stomped on the outnumbered and undersized Antifa members. The victims in this case were never identified, and Antifa refused to cooperate with the investigation. Prosecutors said that if they could have located the Antifa members, they would have also been charged. A total of 10 Proud Boys were charged in connection with the incident. The judge says, I know enough about history to know what happened in Europe in the 30s when political street brawls were allowed to go ahead. We don't want that to happen in New York. Really? Is that not the world upside down? Is that not unbelievable? Antifa won't even show. They've got their face hidden with masks. They instigate this. I'm talking about the protests. They come and we've seen their behavior enough. That clip we played in Minneapolis is not the exception. It's the rule. And so these guys take them on. And now they're the ones facing prison. And, well, if we could have found Antifa, we would have. But they wouldn't cooperate and we don't know who they are. So these guys are now going to go to jail. This dad of three. I just think it's unjust. I just think it's so unjust. It's hard to take. All right. We'll talk about the president talking about the impeachment situation being a lynching, if we must. I will talk about it for a few minutes, and then we're going to move on to some really, really important things I want to share with you. Okay, so Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Lloyd Wood, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Textiles, Consumer Goods, and Materials at the Department of Commerce. Mr. Wood oversees programs and strategies designed to boost U.S. jobs and exports. Proverbs 12:11 reminds us of the importance of hard work. Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Lloyd Wood as he works on behalf of American commerce and American jobs. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. I've been traveling across the nation over the past few months promoting my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. I've had the chance to speak to many of our listeners in places like Morehead City, North Carolina, and Lancaster, California. It turns out hardly anyone's talking about impeachment. Instead, the Americans I've spoken to are talking about the economy, President Trump's economy, and it's been very good for middle-class Americans. According to new data from the Census Bureau, the middle class has seen gigantic income gains. Median family income now up more than $5,000 since President Trump took office. Under President Bush, household income gains were just over $400 in 8 years, a little over $1,000 under President Obama, a good news story ignored by the mainstream media. The network news anchors may be hollering impeachment, but the average American is just tuned out. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Listen, Joe, you know, we all know that privately in the cloakroom, they speak very disparagingly of them.
They all do.
And if there was a secret ballot in the United States Senate, I think Trump would lose 90 to 10, maybe. He might not
if there were a secret ballot in the Senate this morning, Mike Pence would be president by noon.
Yeah.
That, it is that clear. They want Trump out. They want Mike Pence in. They want a return to conservative principles. They want a return to conservative issues.
They want one day where they're not asked
values.
A question they can't answer.
Yeah, they want
one
to
day.
Talk about policy instead of Donald Trump trying to loot the federal treasury to make hundreds of thousands of dollars on his Scottish resort or his Irish resort or his Miami bedbug-ridden resort. They want to get back to business, and Trump's recklessness won't allow them to do that.
Yeah, well, part of that, I agree with Joe. That's Joe, Morning Joe, talking about how, if Republican senators had their way, Trump would be impeached in a heartbeat. If you could take a private vote, they would impeach him right away just to get rid of him. And I'm telling you, he's right about that. In fact, I want to skip down to clip 12, and I want you to hear at the top of this clip what Mitch McConnell is saying about impeachment. Let's just listen.
Process in the House to which the president's been subjected is totally unprecedented and totally unfair.
Just when you thought the process couldn't get any more unfair, we found out last night that Democrats will now not even allow Republicans to have a copy of the respective transcripts from each of the witnesses we've interviewed thus far.
Our Republican colleagues are shrewdly not talking about what actually happened because it's completely indefensible. So instead, they pick a complaint du jour about whatever is going on in terms of process.
Okay, well, guess what? That was the wrong clip. My fault. But McConnell actually is talking about, in fact, maybe it's in one of the other clips, maybe it's in John Roberts' report, but McConnell is talking about getting the Senate ready for this impeachment. If it comes over, I guarantee you we'll take care of it. They're not talking about it being an illegitimate process. They're not saying that if the House does not have a vote, we won't even hear it. We won't even talk about it. They're not saying anything like that. There's not much pushback. And I've already told you that I believe the senators would, the Republican senators, many of them would, as Joe Scarborough says, impeach him if they had a chance to do that. Yesterday, Michael Bennett was on. He's a Democratic senator, and we played that clip for you where he's being interviewed, and he said in private conversations with Republican colleagues, they intimate to him that, you know, they're not happy. Mr. Trump is embarrassing them, and it's kind of a problem for them, you see, and they just assume it be all over with, and that Mike Pence was installed as, in whatever method, as president. So I think that's true, and I just want to raise that to your attention, because I think the president is in peril if it goes to the Senate. I really sincerely do. Lindsey Graham but here's the thing. Now I'm going to play this clip of Lindsey Graham, and I love what he says. So let's listen to it first, and then I'll tell you what my concerns are. Clip 13.
This resolution puts the Senate on record condemning the House for the future of the presidency. We cannot allow future presidents and this president to be impeached based on an inquiry in the House that's never been voted upon, that does not allow the president to confront the witnesses against him, call witnesses on his behalf, and cross-examine people who are accusing him of misdeeds. All I'm asking is give Donald Trump the same rights as Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton had when it comes to impeachment. Here's the point of the resolution. Any impeachment vote based on this process, to me, is illegitimate, is unconstitutional, and should be dismissed in the Senate without a trial.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's right. Senator Graham is right. And so what he's trying to do is get the Senate to go on record condemning the House. Now, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be really interesting because these squishy Republican senators are going to have to weigh in early on about this. And he's kind of forcing their hand. We'll see what happens with this. It should be something very interesting. The concern I have about Senator Graham is that he's so changeable. He comes out and says one thing, and then he comes out and says the other thing. And I just, that's the only thing that worries me about him. But right now, I think that he's doing the right thing. I think this resolution could be extremely helpful. It needs to happen because the Republicans in the House that are fighting back need some help. They need some help. And so, and the Senate, you know, meanwhile, remains silent and does nothing, as always. Oh, I know Mitch McConnell said something in the top of clip 12, but really it's been very tepid, as usual. The only thing that he is really fierce about is fighting conservatives. Remember how he was going to destroy the Tea Party? Remember that little statement by Mitch McConnell? Yeah, so he gets pretty upset about people on the right, but not so much about Obama and his policies, not so much about the left, and not so much about them going after the president for impeachment. He's not so outraged. He just says what he has to say cautiously. But trust me, he could go the other way easily. And so that's the discouraging thing about this. Well, yesterday, speaking of impeachment, there was another witness that came before the House committees. And of course, we really don't know what was said other than the opening statement because the Democrats released the opening statement. It's a member of the diplomatic corps. I'll tell you whose name is. Catherine will tell you. Catherine Herridge has the report on it. Let's listen.
The top U.S. diplomat to Ukraine came to Capitol Hill under subpoena after his text messages revealed allegations of military aid for political favors, an accusation the Trump administration strongly denies.
Sources familiar with the closed-door session tell Fox News that William Taylor told congressional investigators there were, quote, two channels for policymaking on Ukraine, quote, one regular and one highly irregular. Taylor, who described himself as a career diplomat, said the regular channel went through traditional State Department avenues, and the irregular channel went through the president's people, naming Ambassador Gordon Sondland, former special envoy Kurt Volker, the president's personal attorney Rudy Giuliani, and Energy Secretary Rick Perry. According to his prepared remarks, Taylor explained the significance to President Trump of Ukrainian probes into the last presidential election, as well as the Ukraine energy firm where Hunter Biden sat on the board. Quote, the push to make President Zelensky publicly commit to investigations of Burisma and alleged interference in the 2016 election showed how the official foreign policy of the United States was undercut by the irregular efforts led by Mr. Giuliani. Taylor went further, relaying secondhand information about what he described as a September conversation between Mr. Trump and the administration's point man for the European Union. Quote, President Trump told Ambassador Sondland that he was not asking for a quid pro quo. But President Trump did insist that President Zelensky go to a microphone and say he is opening investigations.
In my 10 short months in Congress, it's not even noon, right? And this is my most disturbing day in Congress so far.
But Republicans point to Taylor's admission that, quote, news of the hold on U.S. aid did not leak until August 29th, almost 5 weeks after the president's phone call with the Ukrainian leader, which they say undercut Democrat claims of a quid pro quo. With Taylor's explosive claims, Republicans accuse their colleagues of unfair tactics.
The Democrats will now not even allow Republicans to have a copy of the respective transcripts from each of the witnesses we've interviewed thus far. And if we want to look at the transcript, we got to go in and there's got to be a Democrat staffer in there.
Yeah, so that was Jim Jordan, and you do get the gist of that. If the way this is working, as Jim just said, Congressman Jordan just said, if they want to read what actually happened, because they can't be in there, it's an Adam Schiff staffer who has to sit with them while they read and have access to it, or to say whether they have access to it at all. It's just unbelievable. Now, Bill Taylor, he served under George W. Bush. He is, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know anything about him other than I doubt he's a fan of President Trump. That's all I can say. He is the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. He took over after the ambassador that was fired and brought home, the one that testified on Monday. Let's see, whatever her name is. I'll get to that in just a second. She testified, and remember, President Trump withdrew her because he said that she was not trustworthy. They said that she was undermining the president's policies, and then Bill Taylor was tapped for that. He says he only took it because he cares about what happens in Ukraine. But the thing of it is, the opening statement, which the Democrats released to the press, is just a complaint. It is a complaint about irregular communications led by Rudy Giuliani. You know what? The president can do whatever he wants. He is the commander in chief, and he is the one he is ultimately the one responsible for our relationships with foreign governments. Yes, we have a bureaucracy. We have a State Department. We have a CIA. But the president really does have the authority. They are all under his authority. They are not kings in this. If there's a king, he's the king when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I can tell you firsthand that diplomacy, I could give you a million examples of how through different channels diplomacy has happened since this nation was founded. A special envoy is detached with a private message to a world leader. There's nothing wrong with that, but they hate Giuliani and Bill Taylor, and I think the diplomats in the State Department feel, you know, displaced. They're upset about it, and I'll prove that to you by sharing this article. I've mentioned this earlier this week, but I didn't have enough time to actually go through it, and I want to do that. This is a stunning article, which I recommend to all of you. It appeared in Politico just 3 days ago, and it's called The Revenge of the State Department. Now, this is political, which is not a conservative outlet, okay? The Revenge of the State Department. They've been derided as a deep state, slurred as Obama holdovers, threatened with draconian budget cuts, and told that President Donald Trump doesn't even need them. Now, America's diplomats are taking their revenge. In recent days, current and former Foreign Service officers have defied Trump administration orders and trudged to Capitol Hill to testify before House committees investigating whether to impeach the president. Colleagues inside the State Department and their allies in the broader foreign policy community are quietly hailing them as heroes, with special praise for those testifying despite still being on the government payroll. In their testimonies, the diplomats have described being sidelined on Ukraine policy as Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, and other Trump political appointees, apparently at the president's direction, pursued a shadow foreign policy that included withholding some $400 million in military aid to Kiev. Their boss, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, has attacked the House process as troubling and defended the legitimacy of Giuliani's efforts. Let me just say in response to that, Giuliani, under the instruction of the president, has every right to do that. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. They're just offended. They're huffing and they're puffing. And, of course, there's a great deal more to it than that. And, of course, the president in the phone call we know did not threaten to withhold money if they didn't investigate the Democrats. That's totally false. It's a totally false narrative. But let me go on to the political article. But some also used the platform to air long-held grievances over Trump and his aides' treatment of the State Department's career staffers, several of whom were demoted or sidelined following attacks by the conservative media. Many of Trump's top aides view Foggy Bottom, that's the nickname for the CIA's headquarters, as a den of Democratic intrigue, a long and widely held suspicion on the right with the roots in the Cold War. For now, though, it feels pretty good to hit back. People are fed up, said Laura Kennedy, a former U.S. ambassador who remains in touch with officials still at state. There's a deep well of resentment that's just bubbled toward the top. Then it goes on, and they talk about a private Facebook for foreign service officers who are considering quitting their jobs. Lower-level people are still terrified they'll be wrapped up in this. And some of them, of course, now I told you, are getting attorneys. They're lawyering up. Yovanovitch, who was the Ukrainian ambassador that President Trump withdrew, told lawmakers that in her 30-plus years as a diplomat, she always stuck to the required ethos of nonpartisanship. So she was incredulous at being recalled over false claims. She warned that the State Department is being attacked and hollowed out from within and stressed that the repercussions go beyond Foggy Bottom. And so it goes on and on. Current state officials said, Department of State officials said that within the department, Yukanovich and Kent in particular are being viewed with strong respect and sympathy. They are seen as career public servants who became collateral damage in political areas. And then it talks about all these essays that are being written by former members of state coming after the president. Yeah, there it's an all-out war. We knew that. This is the deep state. Then they talk about what Pompeo has done, what Rex Tillerson did, how he sidelined career diplomats, and they did steep budget cuts at state. So they're upset. Yes, they are. In fact, now here's one you might not have followed. Pompeo, who is now, of course, the Secretary of State, delivery of this month's speech to the American Association of Christian Counselors about how his faith influences him also troubled many U.S. diplomats. It didn't help that the State Department heavily promoted the speech, including splashing the title of the speech, Being a Christian Leader, atop its homepage. Amid complaints that the department was violating the traditional separation of church and state, officials changed the headline. Just days after President Trump took office, White House officials were infuriated after around 1,000 State Department officials signed a dissent channel memo criticizing Trump's travel ban on people from several Muslim-majority countries. So you get the history there. But I want to tell you some inside story I know. Again, that article is The Revenge of the State Department. We'll put it on our Facebook page. Now, this is the inside information that I'm getting, that career State Department employees are overwhelmingly Democrat. They have been for years. They were during the Reagan administration. They were much further back. And during Barack Obama's presidency, he appointed bundlers and politicos as ambassadors in more than 60% of the embassies. In the last 2 years of the Reagan administration, there were about 80 conservatives appointed by him on the NSC staff. But during the Obama administration, he placed over 600 on that staff. So there are people really inside that deep state that really do hate this president. They've made that clear from day one. And now this is their chance to get revenge. So it's the revenge of the State Department and even self-declared by Politico, which I think is pretty incredible. All right. There's a lot more stories kind of like that, information that I want to give you. I may or may not talk about the lynching story. Listen, if you turn on television, you'll be hearing it all day anyway. So we'll see about that. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to the most recent reports provided by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, researchers looked at fertility rates for women of all age groups and ethnicities and found the nationwide rate was 16% lower than what is needed for a population to replace itself. There has been much discussion about the demographic winter in various European countries. Well, that demographic winter has reached the United States. The first command God gave mankind in Scripture was be fruitful. But man has the penchant to fancy his own ways over God's. Rejecting God's ways always carries severe consequences.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
We need to have our brains saturated in the Word of God in order to be able to defend ourselves against the deception and the lies of Satan.
Brian Fisher, armed with the truths of Scripture, leads the charge into America's culture war.
We need to be people that are immersed in the book, that know the book. Why? Because this is a book of truth.
Listen weekday afternoons at 1 Central. It's Focal Point with Brian Fisher on American Family Radio.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more. Here's what others are saying.
This is Amy Wishman at Life Choice Ministries in Manhattan, Kansas. Several board members and donors told me that this banquet was our best banquet ever. Thanks to J.J. Jasper.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The holy grail for the mindless, obsessive Trump haters is getting their hands on the president's tax returns, and the battle has now reached the Supreme Court. The Supremes should remind everybody in America of the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment guarantees the right of every American to be secure from government intrusion into his person, his house, and his papers. Well, the president is an American, so this protection applies to him, and his tax returns are papers, so this protection applies to them too. The only exception is if authorities have actual evidence a crime has been committed and a man's papers are central to the investigation of the crime. But no one has even alleged that the president has committed a crime. So this is just another snipe hunt. Regressives yammer and blather and bloviate that Trump is not above the law. Well, neither are his enemies.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point. Weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Earlier this week, China's defense minister issued an explicit and mortal threat to Taiwan. He declared that its enslavement through unification with the People's Republic of China was a top priority for the Chinese Communist Party, and he asserted that no one would be allowed to impede the realization of that goal. Those warnings were issued against the backdrop of Beijing's intensifying crackdown in Hong Kong, and the infamous phone call to President Trump from Recep Tayyip Erdogan announcing the Turkish dictator's imminent invasion of northern Syria. Right now, before Chinese dictator Xi Jinping is tempted to make a similar call announcing that Taiwan is the next to be attacked, President Trump should serve notice that America stands squarely with those in the front lines of the war for the free world, the people of Hong Kong and their Taiwanese counterparts. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
What they're doing, they're changing every rule we ever had. You know what's happening in the Intel community today? In the committee, now you, even the members on the committee, the Republicans, cannot read any information unless one of Adam Schiff's own staffers are in the room next to them. No one has ever done this in the party. And if we're wondering who that anonymous person writing, I bet it's Adam Schiff. Remember how he made up the whole transcript when he's talking before the committee of what he wanted the phone call to say? And he won't release anything that's said today. They go out to the press and they said, Taylor, it was terrible. And Adam Schiff won't let us talk about what happened. But I'm hearing, and I just saw Devin talk about this on TV, in 90 seconds, we had John Radcliffe destroy Taylor's whole argument.
Congressman Radcliffe, tell us what happened.
Well, we can't really talk about it, but what we're finding is just his questioning in 90 seconds refuted everything of what Adam Schiff believes out there. There is no quid pro quo. And the one thing that you find out in this process is all this information is just like that whistleblower. Remember, we haven't seen that whistleblower anywhere. Everything's second, third, and fourth hand information.
Kevin McCarthy, minority leader in the House, on with Laura Ingraham last night, explaining, you know, why this is so difficult. And he's referring, of course, to diplomat Bill Taylor's testimony yesterday. Excuse me, we just talked about Bill. He was the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, and he's complaining about Giuliani and others conducted another channel of diplomacy with Ukraine. And it really is just a complaint, honestly. There's, as I said, there's nothing wrong with it. The president has every right to do that if he wants to do that. Kevin now is explaining that further, that the Democrats just are completely holding onto the information here, and that like John Ratcliffe's back and forth with Bill Taylor cannot be, you can't know it. You can't possibly know it. It can't be released. Nobody can see it. This is really, really, really unconscionable. Well, John Ratcliffe was on last night with Martha McCollum, and he said what he could, and I want you to hear it.
It changes every day, Martha. We don't know because they haven't made up their minds. This is Adam Schiff changing the rules literally day to day based on what's happening. We don't know witnesses that are being called and what they're going to be focusing on. It really depends on what they hear. Again, this is, this is an abuse of power. This is us finding out when we walk in the door what the rules of the day are going to be for that particular witness. And it's really unfair for all of us that are trying to represent our constituents in this process. And that's why it should be conducted in open, not behind closed doors, not as a secret grand jury where Adam Schiff, who is a material witness in this case, gets to make up the rules as they go. Why don't we know when the person who ultimately became a whistleblower first went to Chairman Schiff and his staff? When did they meet? How long did they meet? Did they talk about the Ukraine? Did they talk about military aid? Were they referred to a whistleblower lawyer? The only way we can get that testimony accurately is under oath from either members of his staff or from the whistleblower, and he won't bring those witnesses forward. He keeps trotting in career ambassadors who are alarmed at Donald Trump's unconventional approach to foreign policy. Who's surprised at that? And again, Ambassador Taylor today, I found him to be very forthright. He had very strong opinions about Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy. But again, the mainstream media reporting that he provided evidence of a quid pro quo involving military aid is false. I question him directly on that. And under Adam Schiff's rules, I can't tell you what he said, but I can tell you what he didn't say. And neither he or any other witness has provided testimony that the Ukrainians were aware that military aid was being withheld. You can't have a quid pro quo with no quo.
Yeah, so that's Congressman John Ratcliffe from Texas. And you might remember that Congressman Ratcliffe was the person who we played many clips of him going after Bob Mueller. And he did an incredible job of interrogating him, and he got some really good stuff. And we played a lot of that. And as a result of that, the president asked him to be the director of national intelligence. And, of course, then the left went wild, and they went after him. And they talked about how unqualified he was, and they basically made it almost impossible for him to serve, and he had to withdraw. Which reminds me of another story here quickly. I want to tell you that Ken Cuccinelli has now been declared ineligible to lead the Department of Homeland Security. And he's been acting director for Customs and Border Patrol, I think it is. Ken's been doing a great job. He's become the face of the administration, but now they've decided that he's ineligible to lead DHS because of some rules. This is the way it works. The good people are not allowed to serve. It's shocking. It really is. It's very, very upsetting. And let me just tell you, there's a lot at stake. You know, while we watch all of these things going on, there's a lot at stake for us as a country. There's no question about it. But there's a lot at stake for these people who are fighting on our behalf, not just the presidents. They're fighting on the behalf of this country. There is a lot at stake. And I'll just give you an example. Gordon Sondland, who testified earlier this week that there was no quid pro quo. We know that. I don't know how we know that. But somehow we found out that's what he said under testimony. Now, guess what's happening? the Democrats are talking about pursuing perjury charges against him. Can't possibly be telling the truth. So now perjury charges. And then Giuliani now has been charged by the Manhattan office in New York, the U.S. State's Attorney office. I don't know what the charges. No charges have been filed against him. But they have brought charges against what they call Giuliani associates. And you know that. Two of them are Ukrainian. And they're trying to, of course, destroy Rudy Giuliani, who has been a mayor of New York City. He was for so many years, highly respected and loved, a real hero during the World Trade Center bombings and after the World Trade Center attack. And yet people want to destroy him, and I don't know if they can or not, but they certainly are going to do their share of trying. Plus, if they can sideline him, you know, he's going to have to lawyer up, and he's going to have to protect himself, and now he's not going to be able to be aggressive in this Ukrainian investigation. This is how it works. A lot at stake. Now, let me just tell you what else is happening, because it's pretty incredible. NBC News actually broke this, not yesterday, but maybe the day, well, recently. NBC News has reported that the Justice Department officials have said that U.S. Attorney John Durham has found something significant, and critics should be careful. This is the report. The prosecutor conducting the review, Connecticut U.S. Attorney John Durham, has expressed his intent to interview a number of current and former intelligence officials involved in examining Russia's effort to interfere in the 2016 presidential election, including former CIA Director John Brennan and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper. Durham has also requested to talk to CIA analysts involved in the intelligence assessment of Russia's activities, prompting some of them to hire lawyers. And there is tension between the CIA and the Justice Department over what classified documents Durham can examine. With Barr's approval, Durham has expanded his staff and the time frame under scrutiny, according to a law enforcement official directly familiar. And he is now looking into conduct past Donald Trump's inauguration in January 2017. And so this is why the fight is so great. And I'm telling you, Ukraine is the key to what happened. Ukraine is undoubtedly the key. Italy is a big part of this, too. But Ukraine is the center. They're the ones that have that initiated the whole notion that Russia had hacked Hillary Clinton's email and the DNC server. Allegedly have that server. They have the DNC server. And President Trump, that was part of what he asked the Ukrainian president to look into. We hear that CrowdStrike is a Ukrainian company. Can you help us find out where that information is? And why do we don't know that? So I think that's why this frenetic activity, that's why this desperate, desperate rush to impeach President Donald Trump and to take down anyone surrounding him. They are really in a fight for their lives as we are in a fight for the future of this country. There's just no question about that. I'm going to give you some more really interesting. This kind of is the same but different. This is coming from Tyler Durden, who's a great, really great reporter. I'm repeating some tweets here. This is an NBC tweet from Ken Delanian. A Western intelligence official familiar with what Durham has been asking of foreign officials say his inquiries track closely with questions raised about the Russian investigation in right-wing media, a line of inquiry based on accusations made by George Papadopoulos. And this is George's tweet, Papadopoulos. To be clear, a woman in London who was the FBI's legal attaché in the UK and had a personal relationship to Bob Mueller after 9/11 encouraged me to meet with Joseph Mifsud in Rome in March of 2016 and introduced Bruce Orr to top UK prosecutor 4 days before the Trump Tower meeting. Now, you have to know a lot of stuff to understand that, and I can't slow down to explain it enough, but you can just see what George is describing is a setup, undoubtedly a setup, by our intelligence agencies to take down Donald Trump and others around him. You know, making it look like they're conspiring with Russia when in fact they're just innocent. Sending people to meet with them, claiming that Joseph Mifsud is a Russian asset when indeed Joseph Mifsud works with the FBI, among other agencies in the U.S. and has for years. So it's really dirty. It is. And George Papadopoulos also tweets, we have now pinned Peter Strzok's boss, Bill Priestap. He was in London the week of May 16th, 2016, and on the 9th. The day before, Alexander Downer was sent to spy on me and record our meeting. Congress must release the transcripts and embarrass the deep state. So that's what he has to say. And I want to go back to this tweet that I started reading you a couple of days ago, and I may have read it even twice, but I'm going to read it three times. This is by, this came to me from a trusted source. The tweeter is Greg Rubini, and I don't know who that is. I really don't. But it came to me from a reliable source, so I'm going to read you what he says. And this is a repeat. I did this 2 days ago, so hang with me. Imagine if at a dinner in Washington, D.C. in October 2016, that's before the election now, you had John Brennan, director of the CIA, Susan Rice, Obama's national security advisor, together with Eric Ciaramella, the Adam Schiff whistleblower. Adam Ciaramella. Imagine if at that dinner in Washington, D.C., there were also Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, John Kerry, who was Obama's Secretary of State, Loretta Lynch, Obama's Attorney General. Imagine if at that dinner in Washington, D.C., there was also John Podesta and his brother, Tony Podesta. John was the head of Hillary Clinton's campaign. Valerie Jarrett, Samantha Powers, Leonardo DiCaprio. That dinner would be just a couple of weeks before the 2016 elections. And yes, that dinner really happened. And John Brennan, Susan Rice were at the dinner together with Eric Ciaramella, the Adam Schiff whistleblower, and with Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and all the others mentioned above. What does it tell you? John Brennan, Susan Rice, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, they all knew Eric Ciaramella, the Adam Schiff whistleblower. And then he shows a photo. He said, this is not a photo of Eric Ciaramella. It's a photo of Sean Misko, who is the second whistleblower. And he's a dear colleague of Eric Ciaramella, the whistleblower, at the National Security Council, recruited by Adam Schiff in August of 2019. The photo that I show of Sean Misko, who is the second whistleblower, is by Abigail Grace, who worked at the National Security Council under both Obama and Trump. She was also recruited by Adam Schiff in February of 2019. So was the Adam Schiff whistleblower operation planned by John Brennan, coordinated by Brennan with Susan Rice, Nancy Pelosi, and Adam Schiff, using Eric Ciaramella, Sean Misko, and Abigail Grace as Brennan tools? Now again, that's Eric Ciaramella, the whistleblower, Sean Misko, whistleblower too, and Abigail Grace, the one who posted the picture, who had the picture. And guess what? At that dinner in Washington, D.C. in October 2016, there were also two Jameses, James Clapper and James Comey. Yes, that guy who has a higher loyalty. By the way, Comey has a higher loyalty to whom? And guess who else was at the dinner in Washington, D.C. on October 2016? Yes, then the Prime Minister of Italy, Matteo Renzi, the best friend of Obama, who helped Brennan and Comey spy on Trump. That's where Joseph Mifsud, who I mentioned a couple of days ago, was Spain-centric or Italy-centric. And so that's why there's been so much travel to Italy by Barr and the other investigators. As you know, William Barr and Prosecutor John Durham have been in Italy recently. They're going back there soon, not because they like pizza and spaghetti. And guess who else was at the dinner in Washington? Charles Kupchan, special assistant to President Obama and senior director for European affairs at the National Security Council. And Charles Kupchan, by the way, was the boss of the whistleblower, Eric Ciaramella. So that is the incredible, those are so many connections, but it takes a flow chart, no question about it, but you get the general drift. Something was rotten in China when all these people were getting together, and then we've had the things unfold and develop the way they have. Stay tuned and keep praying for these brave men and women. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.